You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
David Goss is in my house. I will not let him sit on the furniture.
No.
He's sitting on the floor right now. Yeah. He doesn't get to have a chair anymore.
That's what I'm willing to do.
Hat trick for Deuce. 2 hat tricks in 4 games.
Are you watching the games? Are you just looking at the stats? Modge Podge.
Hodgepodge?
Hodgepodge.
Modge Podge.
Yeah, there's a Modge Podge. Whole Modge Podge of rumors.
This is a transfer Modge Podge.
It is an ungodly mess.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think about what I want to say.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio on MLSsoccer.com and SiriusXMFC Channel 85. I am Andrew Wiebe. With me, who else? David Goss, chilling in the blue room today. And out west in the octagon, Matt, the armchair analyst, Doyle, ETR is here. I hope that you are ready for this. It's a big show. It's also happy birthday to MLS today. April 6th, the first ever game played
happy
on this day.
Happy birthday to you.
Boy, we are off tune. I had to stop like right there. I think my jingle tone is way better than my happy birthday tone.
I don't think any of your tones
you don't
are
think
very
so?
Good, no.
Not a big fan?
No. I'm also enjoying your Dr. Seuss phase where everything's colors, and yesterday you dropped an I Am Sam reference. Sam, I am.
Yeah,
green eggs and ham. So
I'm into that. That's a aspirational. Dr. Seuss is somebody to try to
Dr.
follow.
Dr. Seuss.
Dr. Seuss.
He said Zeus.
I don't think I did. Maybe that's the MLS in me. Dr. Seussy, Dr. Seuss, whatever it is. A big show for today. Freddie Montero is our guest of the Vancouver Whitecaps coming right up. Of course, the Caps crashed out of CCL, as did FC Dallas. CCL fever. Well, ours is broken, unfortunately, this year. No MLS representation in the final. We'll talk, as always, rinse, wash, and repeat why this didn't work for MLS in the CONCACAF Champions League once again. We'll get to that, but we'll also get to something positive on the CONCACAF side because Victor Montagliani says, and he's the CONCACAF president, that Mexico, the U.S., and Canada are going after that 2026 World Cup bid, and that is some good news that I think nobody else is going to clap for, but I'm really excited about. We'll also talk MLS, of course. Galaxy, 2 losses at home to start the season. They got to figure something out, and they play on Friday night. Mike Pecky starts a new dynasty on the coaching side with RSL. Luis Gil's in, yada, yada, yada. Hot take hotline, that's what you're really waiting for. So we'll get to that in just 1 second. But, guys, on the 21st birthday of MLS, this league is now a man or a woman, however you want to put it. They're an adult. They got to go out in the real world, and they got to figure things out, and they got to be responsible. I'm curious, and I'll start with you, Doyle. The next 10 years, kind of the first epic of adulthood for this league, if we're going on the same kind of year scale that we all go on. What do you want to see? What, when this league turns 30, should we hope to expect? Should we aspire to?
I think we've seen the kind of growth that the last five years that is sort of born of stability. Like once the first 15 years we got through that, we survived and we started to grow a little bit. Now it's kind of explosive, both in terms of more franchises coming in, more money coming in, frankly, and better players for a variety of reasons. And I want to see more of that. And I think we're seeing it with homegrown signings. I think it's been like 23, 24 a year for the last 2 years, and it was about 8 or 9 a year for the 3 years before that. I think that's important. I think what teams like Seattle and obviously Toronto and Atlanta have done in terms of changing the types of top-end players they're targeting, that is hugely important. And I think more and better soccer stadiums. Look, we're still at a point where your stadium matters, and I think that will never stop being an issue for MLS. But I remember the bad old days when we woke up every morning wondering if the league would survive, wonder if this would be the day that it all came crashing down. And we're past that now, and it's fun to watch it grow.
MLS has survived that polio whooping cough age of the early 1900s.
The Great Depression is over, is that what you're saying?
And yeah. Now we'll live to the end.
Combustion engines are in for MLS now. I'm with Doyle. I think it's all these kind of infrastructure things, but I also really look forward to how this age of expansion and how some of these new ownership groups and the owners with a little bit more progressive views on how this league should push forward can influence the others. I think there is going to be an arms race across the board, and it goes stadiums, players, academies, facilities, I mean, up and down the league. And there's going to come a point, I think, in the next 10 years where there are real questions about taking the shackles off when it comes to spending on the player front and upping both compensation when it comes to bringing in outside talent, but also rewarding the talent that's here and making sure that they stay, and your best American, Canadian players, Caribbean players, perhaps even Mexican players at some point here, consider MLS their league of choice. And I know everybody's going to be like, oh, league of choice. Don't go around repeating that. But that really does kind of sum it all up, that advertisers, fans, players, coaches across the board see MLS and say, that is the league that I want to be involved in. That's the league that's on the cutting edge. That's the league that's guiding soccer into this next decade. And that's something to shoot for. It's going to be really hard to hit. Let's not mince words. We're going to talk about CCL and another crash there. So we're not on the brink of it. But those are all things that I think that this league and the clubs and the players and ourselves as people who like it and watch it and consume it on a daily basis should aim for. So let us know what you think. We got the Hot Take Hotline open, of course, 401-206-0MLS. I'm way better at that one, but yeah, what's up?
Oh, hey, are you?
Yeah, no, hey, I'm, you know.
I just add one
evaluation.
One small pipe dream for me, which is, you know, at 30 years, MLS teams will be playing in Copa Libertadores. It won't happen. I'm not even saying it should happen. I just want it to happen.
Yeah, you want to find a way to go to South America for some sweet games.
Yeah, I just think it would be cool.
Yeah, I get that. Let's talk positive in CONCACAF before we get to the inevitable negative. I know we hyped up CCL Fever. We always do. We love it so much, and it always breaks our heart. The positive side of things is that CONCACAF is announcing now that they're going to go for that 2026 bid, U.S., Canada, and Mexico trying to get the World Cup. Of course, the U.S. missed out on 2022. Qatar picked that one up, and there were a lot of gnashing of teeth here about that one. People very, very disappointed. Many people saying that this is going to be the bid that's really the front runner in 2026 because of the fact that this region hasn't had a World Cup since 1994 when the U.S. hosted it. It's a chance for CONCACAF certainly to shed some of the bad vibes and bad reputation and legal troubles that it's had over the last couple of years with all the corruption that was exposed. But there are some questions about why the U.S. wouldn't go after this alone. I personally like the bigger tournament, especially considering the fact that you're talking about that new format, 48 teams, 80 games. I mean, it gets much bigger and there's more opportunity there. I like the fact that you can bring a Mexico City in, a Monterrey in, maybe a Pachuca if we're going to stick with CCL opponents, and a Vancouver and a Toronto. We saw what those did in the Women's World Cup. I think this is a really cool opportunity to widen the tournament. I'm not really on board with the expanded format as far as countries just yet, but I think this could be really cool and certainly a summer that would be one to remember, and I hope that I'm around to really help influence.
Yeah, it would be awesome. I agree with you. I think it sets up well where you can have two or three groups in each country, and they don't have to travel in between until you get to the later points of the tournament, which takes away a lot of the complaints of, do you have to get visas to go between the different countries? How much travel will there be? It'll be similar to what you saw in 94 where you try and keep teams regionalized. The regions might just be a little bit bigger. Guadalajara, great new stadium as well. So you have three or four obvious host cities in every country. I think in the U.S. we saw, 50 stadiums that apply.
Right. The real battle is going to be keeping them out.
Right. So I think it makes sense as well. The region makes sense. I agree with you on all those points. So it would be fun.
To me, one of the great things about tournaments, especially stuff like the Olympics and the World Cup in smaller countries, is the interaction between fan bases on kind of a more regular level and a more regular occurrence. And I think that I'm not in love with the idea of splitting it across three countries or even two countries. I like it when it's a little bit smaller, when there's more interaction, and honestly, I wonder if the World Cup will really feel like the World Cup if it's spread out from the Yucatan all the way up, you know, to Edmonton. To me, I understand why they're doing it. Get that money. But it's not it'll lose a little bit of the magic.
I mean, anyway. Doyle, I agree with you. And I think no matter what, it's never going to be that way again. I think we can all kind of. You can't have 48 teams in a small area. I think
But it's not like the United States was some like small intimate venue.
No, but it was
east to west coast. No, and it's not like the United States. You come here and you say, "Well, I got a universal feel for this culture."
No, but you and me both went to Brazil, and we missed what we read about going to 2014 in George Vesey's book, in James Montague's book. We missed that. I didn't meet.
But are you not going to do Brazil because of that? Because it's a big country?
No, but I think to Doyle, and that's what I'm saying, to Doyle's point, I am also upset that that's going to be missed. But I think that no matter what, I don't think Russia will have that. And I don't know that anyone will ever have it again because I don't think that size can host 48 games. Qatar.
48 teams, you mean? Yeah.
Yeah.
No, yeah.
Qatar, I have no idea because I don't think that anyone does. That one obviously would be intimate like in that way because the whole thing's taking place in one city block or whatever, but you know.
Yeah, look, it's fascinating. There's a lot of news yet to come, but that's sort of the beginnings of the process here. If you want to know how it goes, the bidding process is going to be from June 2017 to December 2018. That's when the different, you know, the different bids prep and present and get ready, and then FIFA will review from January 2019 to February 2020, and then the final decision is at the FIFA Congress in May 2020. So you have years here of news and preparation and changes and possible tweaks. We want to know what you think, though. At Extra Time Radio, Extra Time and MLS Soccer.com, hit up the Hot Take Hotline, 401-206-0-MLS. I assume by this point you have that just in your phone as a contact. If you don't, just go ahead and do that. And also, go subscribe. Make sure you get us every single week. Let's go to the negative, guys. And that's what I have it under on the rundown. Yeah, it's not good. MLS crashed out. Both FC Dallas and the Vancouver Whitecaps. Some of you were hopeful, but sorry, Marcus and Dallas.
Weeby, what's up? First of all, the South does have a bias. What's up? This is Marcus out of Dallas, Texas. Hashtag DTID. We got Pachuca tonight, and I'm calling a 2-1 win for FC Dallas. Either way, in Poppy we trust. We're proud of these boys. Let's go, boys.
Either way, we're proud of these boys are probably what you're taking away right now, Marcus. A good performance from Dallas. Just couldn't get it done down in Hidalgo. A 3-1 loss to Pachuca. On the flip side, Vancouver at home, 2-1 to Tigres. Breck Shea got a goal in the third minute, then he went off hurt in the 10th, which is like the most Breck Shea thing of all time. They just can't get it done as well. I mean, Andre Pierre-Gignac, APG, gets the goal that kind of ices this. It didn't happen. another year, it didn't happen, and we always build ourselves up, but you always have this feeling, or at least I do, on kind of the dark side of your heart where you're like, it won't happen again. As excited as I get, as pumped as I can be about FC Dallas, as much as I can say, you know what, actually I think the Vancouver Whitecaps might get this done. Alphonso Davies is a stud. They've got some guys in midfield. Who knows, who knows, who knows? Well, we now know in 2017 an MLS team will not win the CCL. Doyle, what are kind of your big picture thoughts here when you see another failure like this in a competition that the league has really put a lot of emphasis on to say this can help us be one of the best teams in the region? We need to go win this. Dallas gets a break. They can't get it done, even though they went to Puebla. Where do you stand?
I'm not sure there has been all that much emphasis on it in MLS, but I understand that some feel like there has been. Look, Dallas were playing without their best player. When Mauro Diaz got hurt in October of last year, I said they don't have a shot at even advancing to the semifinals. I thought they were dead. And the fact that they came within, you know, a brain fart from their backup left back of advancing to extra time, at least with a really good Pachuca team, says a lot about the talent that Dallas have. You know, Minor Figueroa would not have been in that game if Anabel Chala was healthy. And you go on down the list and you say, okay, there were some things arrayed against them. And Vancouver is a team, I think, in a little bit of flux, and they played a lot better against Tigres than I thought they would. It stinks to watch these teams not win year after year after year, but I think the talent differential is less pronounced than people maybe realize. I think there are structural issues in MLS. The way that Oscar Pereja played, he required really, really energetic outings from Kellen Acosta and Carlos Grezo. And once those guys started to flag around the 65th, 70th minute, that's when Pachuca started to take over the game. If Dallas had Weston McKennie, available as a sub to a high level box to box guy to replace what Acosta was doing because he was the best player on the field for the first hour. Could Dallas have come away with this result? That's not a talent issue. That's a structural issue because Dallas weren't able to sign Weston McKennie 2 years ago. Schalke got him. And so I think these are the harder, bigger questions that MLS has to answer. And I think until they're answered in the affirmative, the league won't overtake Liga MX. They'll compete. And I have no doubt that in the next few years, there will be MLS teams that win a couple of these ties. But if it comes to being the best league in the Americas, it's not going to happen until MLS answers these structural issues. The last two nights are just more of the same in that regard.
I agree. Echo everything that Doyle's saying. One little piece looking at these games specifically was that I thought Dallas wasn't ready to play at the start of the first leg, and I thought they weren't ready to play at the start of the second leg, and that's mental. And you thought this team, you heard about what John Arnold said, that this was a Latin team, a team of players from around the region. You thought maybe that they'd come in and feel more comfortable, and one of the issues in that energy dropping after the 65th minute, which was absolutely the game changer in this, was why wait to the 45th for you to start going? You only had 20 minutes to score a goal there. What are you doing the opening 45? I understand you want to find your feet. They created one or two chances. Lama had opportunities to set people up, had opportunities himself. But they weren't attacking Pachuca with energy. And when they did to open the second half, they dominated possession and they dominated the game, which shows you that they're capable of it. You're never going to do it for 90 minutes. But they were turned off in the first 20, gave up an early goal to Yara, and then the second leg, they didn't push for the early goal.
Yeah, and look, goals.
They did have their chances, though. That break from Coleman.
Yeah.
Look, DPs are brought in to finish those chances, and he did not. And that was a game-changing miss. And Michael Barrios' miss at the 62nd minute. To every MLS fan who has watched their team in CCL has seen a miss like that and thrown up their hands and said, well, not going to be our night. That's going to come back to kill us. And it did.
Absolutely. It's killer instinct. At the end of the day, every single one of these ties, I watch the games and I feel like, okay, maybe the MLS squad, fill in the blank name, maybe they get it done here. Oh, that's a good chance. Just couldn't quite do it. On the flip side, when you watch Liga MX teams in this competition, when they get the chance, that ball goes in the back of the net. When they got to pull the guy down on the break and take the yellow card, they find a way to pull that guy down. When they need to kill the game and step on the ball and pull you out and tie you down, that's what they do. So there's an experience side of things, and there is a confidence side of things. You mentioned that, Dave. MLS teams haven't done it. I can understand why going into a stadium, you would say, oh, I don't know. It's, you know, when the U.S. goes into Azteca, are they thinking, we got this dub?
Nah, like, but it felt like FC Dallas was different because the way they were built, because the way they've been coached, because of the confidence in that team. I agree with you.
But yeah, it can feel different. Everything can feel different. When you step on the field, it's the result. And no results this year in the CCL semifinals.
Weeby, if Mauro Diaz is there, do you think it's a different result?
I can't speak to the result, but I think it's a different game. There's no doubt about that. But the flip side of that is Mauro Diaz, he gets hurt. Like, that's part of having that player. You knew that was an issue, a potential problem.
And the other thing is, let's go down the wormhole. Is Kellen Acosta the player he is right now? Does he have that touch and get to the end line on that play that they should have finished? Is Urruti and Coleman both out there somewhat setting each other up, although not as well as they should? You could go down a wormhole.
Acosta's pass, that the pass before the pass on the Coleman breakaway, was so freaking good. Like, his ability to just wait the extra half second and set up the Pachuca defense to create. Oh, he was so good. He is the best central midfielder in the U.S. player pool right now.
Pass before the pass. That probably means it's time for us to get to the break. At Extra Time Radio, Extra Time at MLSsoccer.com, 401-206-0MLS. Look, I know you got CCL hot takes. Any and all we will take. We're going to be right back. We'll talk to Freddie Montero on the other side.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Don't tell a lie on me. I won't tell a truth about you. Don't tell a lie on me. I won't tell a truth about you.
Back now on Extra Time Radio. Andrew Weaver, David Goss, and Matt, the Armchair Analyst Doyle. Freddie Montero of the Vancouver Whitecaps coming up in just 1 second, so stick around for that one. Let's talk about the MLS weekend, though, another slate of games. And it starts on Friday night, the LA Galaxy hosting the Montreal Impact. 10:30 p.m. Eastern on that one. You can watch on MLS Live here in the U.S., TVAS or TSN in Canada. Here's the thing, man. Galaxy lost 3 of 4 to start, and I'm sure in the comment section on the power rankings, people are playing out the, you know, they always like to play out our meeting notes, in which the LA Galaxy are always front and center. Well, it has not been the case this year. 2 home losses, that doesn't feel good. Their only win here is at RSL, depleted RSL, RSL that fired their coach, so not exactly great. After this loss to Vancouver, Yellow Van Dam, we blanked up pretty bad today. It's all personal mistakes. That blank, that rhymes with trucked. So not a great place, and they're making that public. Doyle, I'm looking at this team, and I'm looking at their roster, and I'm saying, is this a big problem, or is this a 2016 Red Bulls problem, or is it somewhere in between? How much does this slow start actually speak to who this team is?
I think it speaks a lot to who this team is. Defense, and look, I said it last year a million times. They led the league in clearances off the line. They've already done a bunch of it this year. I don't think that they can. It's just not sustainable. You're not gonna clear a shot off the line 3 times a game, and it feels like that's what the Galaxy have done. I think the attack is going to be very, very good. I think they will win some games 4-3, especially with Zardes back and Gio healthy and Alessandrini playing like he played last week, and that's pretty cool. But I don't see it in defense. I think goalkeeping is a real issue for this team. And I think that João Pedro has looked a step and a half behind the game in MLS. So I think this is a team with some struggles.
Reyes calling from Annandale, Virginia, which is Bill Hamid's hometown, by the way. Now, that being said, I am a huge LA Galaxy fan. And I just have to say, João Pedro, I think he's got to go. I really think that Hrsidic is a more proven midfielder that can play in that position with fewer mistakes and with better, more clear options going forward. That's my hot take.
Hot take hotline coming through there. Look, João Pedro.
I don't even know if that's a hot take at this
point. I'm not sure. It's pretty lukewarm right now. He has not performed after coming to this league. And we know there's an adaptation process. There's no doubt about that. He's also playing next to Jermaine Jones, who we've seen over the years has not been the easiest partner to have, especially in that deep-lying center midfield role. But there is some...
I wonder, though, if you can play Jermaine Jones as a pure defensive midfielder and maybe get a more attacking guy, a more proven guy from within that roster onto the field in place of João Pedro.
Which is,
even if it's Baggio Hussetic, who's not, nobody's going to confuse him for an all-star, but he's a reliable player.
And this is where the Legette injury kills you, because he's a guy who you could put in right there who can play both ways.
I'm also not sure that Jermaine Jones thinks that he's a defensive midfielder or is willing to play as a dedicated defensive midfielder. I think he has the physical capabilities, the tactical capabilities. I'm not sure that he's willing to do that. So some issues for LA. We'll see if they can get back going at 10:30 p.m. on Friday. Check that one out. Make sure you watch it. The game starts at 2 p.m. on Saturday with MLS. Schweinsteiger, baby, hosting Columbus Crew SC. Well, he's not. Chicago Fire are. But right now it feels like he's front and center. There's no doubt about that. It's a bigger test defensively for them, certainly than Montreal were. Impact really haven't looked very good going forward, especially without Nacho Piatti. No Juninho in this game. That red card leaves him out. So they've got a real test here. On the flip side, we're still trying to figure out what's going to happen with Crew SC and Kakuta Mane. One thing we didn't emphasize on this show that we really should have is that the crux of that trade, Tony Chani for Kakuta Mane, is all about whether they can re-sign him. It's the last year of Kakuta's contract. If they do re-sign him, some assets roll over to Vancouver, but then you also have a 22, 23-year-old, potentially U.S. national team winger running the show in Columbus. So that's a really big one. The other thing is, what happens to Justin Miram in that sense? We've been talking about it a ton. We've also got some hotline from that. It's just flowing in.
Hey, guys, this is Mike from Cleveland, and I'm glad to hear that the Miram hype train.
That was my fault.
Gotta be ready, bro.
No, I was ready. I hit the wrong button. I'm doing it again. Ready?
Hey, guys, this is Mike from Cleveland, and I'm glad to hear that the Miram hype train is off and running, because I've been saying for 2 years that Greg is getting him ready to take over for Higuain. When Higuain inevitably retires. He moves into the inside. He's always likes being in the pocket. I think it's a great idea. And also that Dallas game made me almost as sad as the 2015 MLS Cup. All right. Thanks, guys. Bye.
I left that last part in there so we could all mourn together. But I agree with him. I'm clearly on board with him. I think Miriam showed the ability to. I think he plays well in that position. He's not going to be the same player as Higuain. So that's not what you're looking for. But that isn't an issue. You're changing the way this team can work a little bit, bringing in Mane, Ola Kamara, a different player than Kai Kamara. And I think this team can be just as successful, if not more consistent, than what they are now.
2 p.m. Eastern on Saturday, Chicago Fire hosting Columbus Crew SC. That one's on MLS Live for everybody, U.S. and Canada. At the same time, a goal fest maybe? New England Revolution, Houston Dynamo. This is Houston's opportunity to prove that they're for real because they've won 3 games at home. Like, that's all well and good.
No way that this is their opportunity.
Yeah, what, 3 games at home? Fine. You got wins? Good for you.
They beat the Red Bulls. They beat Seattle. They go to Portland. Yes, they lost, but they lost 3-2 in a game that they were even on.
All right.
They've already proven that they're
for real. Okay, we have a personal wager here?
Yeah, fine.
If they lose this game, what are you going to say?
I
don't know. We'll revisit this after the weekend because I think we may split this one. It's going to be a fun one, though. I think a lot of games in that one.
If there's a soccer god, it'll be 7-7.
7-7?
Yeah.
Where did you come up with that?
2 touchdowns.
Union Timbers, 7 p.m. Eastern. You got a little break in the middle of the afternoon. That's where you spend time with your kids or, you know, hang out with your girlfriend or your boyfriend or whatever you want to do. And then you'll come back to MLS later on. Look, the Union need a win. They have none this year in 4 games. 2 draws, 2 losses. That 2016 season, look, we all know it didn't end well. They got to the playoffs, but there was a fade down the stretch. And folks in Philly, fans, media members, they're talking about Jim Curtin and the head coaching job. Doyle, what do you make of that conversation and what has to happen here with this team to get things turned around?
Yeah, he's already the longest tenured head coach in Union history, which suggests that he has been given a longer leash than they're used to there. I questioned the offseason signings this team made when they happened. Harris Medinyanin requires a lot of protection around him and changes the way the team play. They don't really have a number 10. Roland Ahlberg is not that guy. Alejandro Bedoya, I think, is better when he can face the game as a box-to-box player. And if not for CJ Sapong, this would be a disastrous start to the season. It's tough right now in Union land. I don't think there are easy answers, but there are still a lot of questions. And I didn't even touch on the back line. Oguchi Onyewu has looked like a guy who hasn't played much soccer in the last 3 years. It's tough. It's tough for the Union right now.
Medunian. I just want to throw that in.
Thank you.
It's not an easy one. It's not an easy one. A little alphabet soup from us. You know what? These things happen. At 7:30 p.m., it's Toronto FC, Atlanta United FC. No Josef Martinez in this one. He's still injured, but he did win the March Player of the Month, so props to him on that one. And this might be my favorite Hot Take Hotline submission of the week. It's just golden.
If Miguel Almiron does not score 3 goals against Toronto FC this weekend, I will light myself on fire. Somebody call 911.
Yeah, that one was hot. Definitely hot. For sure. Do not light yourself on fire over MLS. Just, I'm going to throw that out there. As a general rule in life, don't do that. This one's going to be a fun game, though. TFC and Atlanta United at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. FC Dallas also going to host Minnesota United at 8, also on MLS Live. Watching that one to see what the Minnesota United 11 looks like. Sam Cronin coming in. Can they fix those defensive issues? They finally got off the schneid. I'm not sure wins plenty are going to be in the offing for this team, but maybe this is an opportunity, maybe some CCL hangover for RSL. For FC Dallas. For RSL, though, it's a new era. A new dynasty, maybe, or maybe not a dynasty.
New sweater.
But, yes, a new sweater. Certainly many new sweaters. Mike Pecky is going to make his head coaching debut against the Vancouver Whitecaps on Saturday night, 9:30 p.m. Eastern. TSN up in Canada, MLS Live here in the U.S. We wait with bated breath as to what sweater he will don for this historic match. We'll also talk to Freddie Montero in just 1 second. What are we going to see from Mike Pecky here? What sort of coach is he going to be tactically as far as personality goes? Because, you know, that's a big part of kind of his aura. Doyle, when that team takes the field, what are they going to try to show their fans? Because this is an opportunity at home to kind of come out and say, hey, some of these struggles, that's not what it's going to be for the rest of 2017.
Well, I think they're hoping for a win, first and foremost. They haven't had one since last August. I don't think they've had many goals at home since then either. So I think those are one and two on the list. And I've been saying for a while, I think the best way to do it is to pull Joao Plata inside and make him a second forward. That's the position he played in 2014 when he had something like 13 goals and 9 or 10 assists. You limit the amount of kind of useless running he has to do if you pull him inside and don't strand him on the wing. And you create that triangle with Plata, Movsisian, who's got goals in 2 straight games now, by the way, and Rusnak. I think that is what this team has to be built around in the short term while you kind of figure out the defensive issues. And they have been absolutely hammered by injuries on the back line. They were down to their 5th and 6th choice center backs last weekend. So I think you give them a little bit of a mulligan there.
We'll see what happens. Mike Pecky leading his guys out there at 9:30 p.m. on Saturday night. TSN in Canada, MLS Live in the U.S. Freddie Montero likely to be on the field. You can follow him on Twitter @_FreddieMontero. He's on the line now. Freddie, what's up, man?
I'm doing good. Thank you guys for inviting me.
I think you're a guy that MLS fans have watched for a lot of years, Freddie. I mean, obviously since 2010 with Seattle Sounders, and then kind of on your journey since, and now back in the league in Cascadia. Tell me a little bit about this decision. Like, what were kind of the moving parts, Freddie? What were you faced with coming into this transfer window, and why eventually Vancouver and MLS?
Well, everything started when they changed the rules in China about the international or the foreign players that can be in the field. And I didn't want just to play one game, the next game I'm not playing. And, you know, I wanted to look for something where I feel comfortable playing, and I was able to look forward to win something. And MLS was one of those opportunities. We all know the rules. I had to came into the re-entry draft or whatever is that called, and I'm glad that Vancouver did everything possible to take my place.
Well, since you've left MLS, you have an American family. How often have you been coming back? How much have you been following the league?
Well, my family, it's always been with me anywhere that I go. They went to Colombia when I had to stay there for 4 months. They went with me to Portugal, and they went with me in China. So for us, it's been amazing to be close to Seattle. We have family members from my family, from my wife and my side as well. So we're happy to be in Northwest again.
What was China like, Freddie? Tell me a little bit about the Chinese Super League, because you mentioned those rule changes, and people in MLS really looked at those and said, hey, maybe there's an opportunity here, and then you arrived. But I'm more interested in kind of the day-to-day life, the league, the quality of play, what you experienced there. Did you enjoy yourself?
Well, when I signed the contract, the team was I didn't know that much about the league, but I thought the team was looking to do better. But unfortunately, that year that I was there, we were playing to don't go to relegation, and that was a really, really hard year for me personally and for the team as well. And I didn't want to go through the same thing all over again, especially when they changed the rule. And from 5 international players in like a starting 11 to 3, it was a huge change, especially for my team when, as I said before, we didn't have enough players to deal or to fight for the championship. So I just wanted to get a new air. And yeah. That was when MLS showed up, and that was a good opportunity for me and for my family as well.
What was China like living-wise, day-to-day, how you kind of just went about your life? What did you think about that, and were you recognized? Did people see you as a player? Did you have interactions with fans? What was it like?
Well, it was very difficult. Not that many people can speak English, even my teammates. But, I had fun the whole year. Trying to explore the new culture, you know, the food, always you find a way to live, like finding a school for my girls, finding a good place to live close to the more international market. I think the only hard part was like going everywhere with the translator, because, of course, they don't speak English, and Chinese was like the only way to do stuff, especially at the bank or when we needed to do something at the hospital with the kids, stuff like that.
You mentioned your children, and I think back to, you know, I think back to 2010, Freddie, and I think about the player and the person that you were when you came into the league. I mean, it's years ago now. You're in your early 20s. You're now a family man. You've got a long-established career in Europe, in Asia, in North America. Can you think back to that 2010 season and who you were and what was that like? What are your memories from that expansion year in Seattle and your own life at that time?
Best memories, you know, like I had the opportunity to grow as a person and as well as a player. So I think everything prepared me to jump into that big opportunity in Europe when I had to spend almost three years with Sporting of Portugal to win championship, to play games, to score goals in big games. Yeah, I have the best memories from Seattle. I mean, I always came back to Seattle whenever I have vacations. So for me, it's like going back home.
What was your thoughts of Vancouver when you visited Vancouver as an away player? And what came to mind first when you realized you'd be going there as a player?
I knew a lot of criticism was coming from the Seattle supporters. But I still have the hope that they understand my position, and this is nothing personal, just the way soccer in America works and business. You know, at the end of the day, I'm glad that Vancouver did everything possible. They showed me that they really value all that I did in my past in MLS and on my career that I show up in Europe as well.
Obviously, goals are something they were looking for, and Freddie, you score goals. That's your job. Do you feel a pressure there? Because this has been a hole that the Whitecaps have been trying to fill for, I mean, years and years and years now. When you take the field, when you're in the community, when you're at training, I have to imagine you feel a real pressure to deliver.
Yeah, the pressure is coming from myself. Mentally, I'm thinking that this year is going to be my best year ever. I think I'm prepared. I have enough experience to be better. And of course, if the team is needing something in the past, so now I'm here and happy to be here. And of course, I'm gonna do my best to always try to win games. And our goal right now is trying to make the playoffs. So I'm looking forward for that day.
To you, what is your best year ever? Like, what does that mean? When I hear you say that, I have to imagine that Vancouver fans hear it and think, oh, man, they start to get excited. What does that mean to you?
Well, going back to my last year in MLS and do better than that. And, yeah, as I said before, I feel like all these years outside of America showed me another way. How to grow and use that experience playing with high-level players next to them, against them, playing for big tournaments. So now using that on my side for Vancouver, that is a team that is looking forward to make the playoff. And individual, I want to be better than my last year in MLS.
Freddie, what was the experience, what was the jump like from playing for Seattle to playing for Sporting, one of the big clubs in Portugal? What was the competition difference like, the pressure that was on you, the style of play?
Well, it's funny because in Europe they don't have that much time to wait, especially when the competition for the spots, it's high. If you don't show up one game, you may be on the bench and the next one, and then you have to wait for that opportunity again to come down to you. And I feel like the first years, they were good. And after that, I can say the Sporting didn't look on bringing more forward, because the two that we have back then, they feel that we can fill the the need that the team was looking to affront this competition, Champions League, Europe League, and Portuguese Cup, and of course, Portuguese League.
While you were overseas, since you've been in MLS, how much do people reach out to you? How much do people ask you about Major League Soccer and being curious or looking at coming here as well?
It's funny, but a lot of my teammates, so a lot of friends that the soccer or football is giving me through the years, they all want to come at some point to America. But it's getting difficult with the years because it's a league that is growing, of course, and MLA is a league like now. It's not about coming here and retire. It's about making a career. So I think you have to be good enough for the team to look at you and say, okay, we are going to invest in you because we know that you can do our team better.
It's been a while now since you've been in the league, and I imagine that you were watching from afar and seeing the Sounders and how they did and the rest of the league around it. From your personal experience now in Vancouver and playing in some of these games in MLS and, of course, CCL, which we'll get to in just a second, what's the difference in level? Do you see an improvement among the teams that you're playing against and your teammates? Do you see an improvement on the facilities side? What's the difference between the MLS you left and the MLS you're in right now?
Well, facilities always been excellent. I wanted to say that the level in the game, it's getting high. Now it's not physical only. It's now a lot of quality, a lot of physical game. And the game is not stopping that much like it used to be in the past. Well, that's from my perspective, you know, what I saw when I used to play here in MLS.
How did you feel in the competition in CCL against Tigres? You played in CCL years ago with Seattle. How did you feel the difference was, because that's a big question for fans, between your MLS side and the Liga MX team?
Well, that's something that we should passing the right message, because I didn't feel like we give that importance to international competition. I know MLS is a huge thing for all the teams, but at the same time, in the international competition has to be even bigger. That's for Tigres, that's for Pachuca that are playing the final, and it should be like that for MLS, for any MLS team that is playing for this competition.
How much emphasis did Carl Robinson and the Whitecaps and yourself put on this competition? When you look at this and you compare it to the way you prepared for MLS games, how big a deal did this feel like? And what do you feel like today on this Thursday to know that your run came up just short of the finals?
Well, it's hard to tell because the message was the same. All the players wanted to advance to play the final. We knew that another opportunity like this one is going to be difficult to have it. I mean, Tigres is the champion of Mexico, and they have top-level players. And, of course, they are used to play this kind of game, this kind of competition. And for them, it's another game. For us, that was maybe the last one for some of the players.
Next up for Vancouver Whitecaps at Real Salt Lake. But after that, Freddie, you guys are hosting the Seattle Sounders, and I'm looking at the schedule here. You've got a couple more games against the Sounders coming up, another one at BC Place in August, and then you go to Seattle in September. I have to imagine those are games that you and your family are circling, no doubt about that. You always get asked, I'm sure, will you celebrate against the Sounders? When you play in these games, what will it mean? And if you score a goal and maybe even get a win, how will you approach that?
I won't be celebrating the goals for sure, but at this moment today, I want to focus on Real Salt Lake. That's the game that we have in front, and of course, we are looking forward to get 3 points.
Freddie Montero, _ Freddie Montero on Twitter. Give him a follow. Watch him with the Vancouver Whitecaps. Freddie, thank you so much for your time, man. Go enjoy lunch with your family, okay?
Okay, thank you for having me, and talk to you next time.
big thanks to Freddie for joining the show a day after that disappointment in CCL as well. A big season for Vancouver. See if they can turn it around against RSL in the league on Sunday. Some big games on national TV. It starts at 4 p.m. Eastern on ESPN in the U.S., MLS Live in Canada. Orlando City hosting the Red Bulls at that brand spanking new stadium down there in Central Florida. And they'll have a new player, Luis Gil. You know that name. He was with RSL from 2010 to 2015. Of course, the Jason Kreis era there. 134 games, 89 starts for RSL, 11 goals, 9 assists, and he's still just 23. He arrives on a season-long loan from Querétaro in Liga MX. He really didn't play much down there, and Orlando picked him up. He got the right of first refusal from RSL for $100K in TAM. If they don't extend that deal, if he doesn't stay past 2018, $50K will go back. They'll kind of split the difference there. Doyle, is this a good move? What is the sense behind this move? I look at their roster, and we've been talking about it all year, and like, man, they got a lot of central midfielders. How do you find time for all of them? Is this a return to the diamond? We know that Gil is very familiar with that, and Jason Kreis prefers it.
Yeah, I don't know if he's the type of guy who is going to play as a number 10 in the diamond. I think he's probably a little bit better in that box midfield that they've been playing. You put him in the spot that Giles Barnes has been playing, Kaká's spot when Kaká comes back, or you swing him out right and you have him play a little bit more energetically, touchline to touchline. That might work best for Luis Gil. I'll say this, he's been a pro for 6-7 years now. I still don't know what type of player he is, and apparently Querétaro didn't either.
I fully agree, and people were covering, you know, a lot of people were rumors that this Gil deal, and it's like, is it a rumor if it's something no one's really looking at? Like, Gil was such a hyped player, but he has not produced anything. So I don't know that this is an impact move for Orlando right now. I don't know that this is much more than when, you know, Red Bulls bring in a young kid from Cameroon that we never see.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure it goes that distance. I think I might look at Gulbranson up top and say it's a flyer. What can this guy do? We know he has talent. We're not sure he fits in. We're not sure where he'll play, but we know we like his attributes. Can we be the club that gets the most out of him? We'll see. 4 p.m. Eastern, Orlando City and the Red Bulls on ESPN. At 7 p.m. Eastern, FS1 in the U.S. and MLS Live in Canada, Sporting Kansas City against the Rapids. If you want to know how this post-Cronin era looks for Colorado, I suggest you go to Burgundy Wave. A really, really good ride up there from our guy, Rapids Rabbi. You really want to tune in for that one. See about that. As well as 6 p.m., MLS Match Day Live, myself, Mike McGee, we will go over all the action from the weekend on the MLS Facebook page and lead you right into that game. If you have any thoughts, questions, comments, hot takes, whatever it may be, 401-206-0MLS or hit us on Twitter or via email at Extratime Radio, extratime@MLSsoccer.com. When we come back, oh boy, it's Hot Take Hotline time.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime@mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extratime Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
I know exactly where I was when I first saw you, the way I see you now through these eyes.
Back now on Extratime Radio, Andrew Reeby, David Goss, and Matt, the armchair analyst, out in the octagon. This is my new favorite part of the show, the mailbag, no doubt about it. It was always really a highlight. But now that every day I get to come in and listen to your rantings and ravings on the Hot Take Hotline, it's really the highlight of every single.
It's kind of all
single,
we talk
yeah,
about.
It is.
We've got text threads
of like, oh, my God, did you hear the one that just came in? Of course, the number 401-206-0MLS, and we've got a jingle. We've got a jingle.
All right, guys, this is Dennis from Portland. Here is your jingle. 401-206-0-MLS. 401-206-0-MLS.
You know, I like it.
Like it.
I like it. It's a little bit, it's kind of, it's almost like druidy. I don't think that's a real word, but
listen,
it's like druids chanting.
I don't think it's as good as the first jingle that we got last week.
I thought you were going to say my jingle.
No, your jingle's terrible.
Okay.
But I do want everyone should send us a jingle
using
a chant from their MLS supporters.
That may be like, if everybody sends us jingles, we might be able to just like weave those together in some sort of like beautiful tapestry of hotline jingle.
What I'm saying is by this time next week, if I don't have a Believe chant ETR hotline jingle, I'm going to be so upset.
Come on, David.
Yeah, that's all I want.
Look, we sing it on this show all the time. Give Dave what he wants. Do it. Call the hotline right now and do it. 401-206-0.
If you believe, then call us on the phone.
MLS. Oh, yeah. I like this. We might be able to. We can just do this ourselves.
No, we definitely cannot.
We can't? No? Okay.
Can't you use your show tunes, your Broadway connections to get a professional to write us a jingle?
I'm going to see Waitress tonight. Just saw Natasha Pierre in The Great Comet of 1812. Yeah, so maybe I can ask
you just set that and Dave just spiked it. Like, give him show tunes and you just turn your ears off for the next 30 minutes.
Nailed it.
What else we got in there?
Hi, this is Ty Okola from Berkeley, California, and I was wondering, I know Tim Howard and Brad Guzan are getting a little old, along with Nick Armando, and I was wondering who the next generation of U.S. keepers will be and who will be starting after this generation of keepers passes. Thank you.
Wow, that got a little dark there at the end. I think that... I think that Guzan's probably got through the 2022 cycle, so I'm not really too worried about this. Clearly, to me, Bill Hamid is the most talented of the younger keepers, but he's still inconsistent. Ethan Horvath has a lot of cred because he's had a good career arc and is still very young and has very, very good feet, but he's got to play. David Bingham, I thought, had a good year last year. He has been not good to start out 2017. So I think it does remain an open question, but it's not an urgent question because Howard and Guzan and Romando are still international caliber guys, despite Nick Romando's horrible, bad, terrible, no good week last week.
I can't believe Zach Steffen didn't get a mention in that one.
Yeah, I need to see a little bit more from him. His feet aren't great. So, there's a lot to like. But if we're going to be one of those countries that plays the ball from the back, I need to see him do a little bit better in that regard.
Last week, one of us mentioned, I don't know who, that FC Dallas could be one of the greatest teams in MLS history. We got a reaction to that.
This is Ray from Milwaukee. And I'm just saying that I know you guys say a lot of stupid things on your show because the MLS fan isn't a very educated soccer fan.
Whoa, Ray!
To try to sell me that this is the best team, that Dallas is the best team ever in MLS is ridiculous. You look at that MLS team, you look at the LA Galaxy that won the championship in 2012 that had David Beckham, King, Donovan, McGee, Gonzalez, Jorginho, and then you look at the Real Salt Lake team that featured Saburillo, Espindola, Morales, Beckerman, and Borch. Come on, guys. Dallas wasn't even as good as they were 2 years ago, on paper anyways. All right, good night.
Yeah, what matters isn't on paper. What matters is on the field, and Dallas is the first team in MLS history to have back-to-back 60-point seasons, and they came pretty close to a treble last year. I don't think any of us said they're the best team in MLS history, but they are among the best, and I think that their record kind of bears that out. If they put together another 60-point season this year, and if they get another title, whether it's the Open Cup or the Shield or MLS Cup, which is, I think, the one they want, then you can definitely open up the discussion because they'll have earned it.
Yeah, look, that's the point, is they got to do it on the field. I think that's the point that we made and maybe that he was referencing back in our Western Conference preview, because we're talking about, hey, they could win the treble. And if they do, then I don't think there's any doubt that this team in the current iteration of MLS and the way CCL is set up and the way the competition is laid out, that they would be in that conversation, if not at the top of it. I like Ray coming in on us, but
there's another issue with the way that the argument was formed. He mentioned the 2012 Galaxy team and then rattled off a bunch of big name players, which speaks to a type of stargazing rather than paying attention to actual results. The 2012 Galaxy team finished, I think, fourth or fifth in the Western Conference that year. They weren't a particularly good team until the playoffs when, Landon Donovan started doing Landon Donovan things and Robbie Keane started doing Robbie Keane things. Of that iteration of the Galaxy dynasty, 2012 was probably the worst one. So I think there has to be a recognition that while our friend called MLS fans uneducated, he's the one who actually took the sort of blinded Whoa. By the light stance.
Whoa.
So I hope our Ooh. Listener base kind of understands that and takes that into play with discussions like this.
Watch out when you send in that hot take hotline voicemail, because Matt Doyle is out here just ready to ride on you. Are you watching the games? Are you just looking at the roster? He says, what else we have in here?
Hey, this is Josh Lafferty, Crew fan since 2002. I want to throw out a Imagine. Hot take. The biggest thing that I've seen this year that nobody spoke about is how the tables have turned. Major League Soccer used to rent out huge NFL stadiums, and now for the first time this year, NFL teams are renting out Major League Soccer stadiums. Oh, the tables have turned.
I love the fact that I think there's a baby crying in the background there. I mean, the background noise on some of these voicemails is partially the best part. And, like, the tables haven't completely turned. You know, like, the Revs are still playing in there. You've got different teams, including Atlanta and Seattle, that are essentially tenants in NFL buildings, although there's ownership issues there where, you know, Arthur Blank owns both. And so are you a tenant? You're not. You have your own locker rooms. You have your own facilities, yada, yada, yada. But I do think, as Doyle said, that MLS is getting past the point from a facilities perspective where you look around the league and you say, well, most of these teams don't have control of their venue, or most of these teams can't do what they want and set it up the way they want. They have their own stadiums in large part. They're building ones with designs that are for soccer and for their teams and for their fan bases. So that's all a step forward. But there is a little bit of, Simpsons-esque, ha-ha, when you see, you know, San Diego come up to L.A. and play in the StubHub Center.
Let's talk about stadiums. We have an email here from Cornell from The Loop in St. Louis. He says, diehard soccer fan here, thought finally was going to see an MLS team come home to the home of U.S. soccer. Really disappointed by the vote. What did you guys make of it? P.S. going to continue to support my USL squad.
Yeah, it was disappointing for St. Louis and soccer fans there, no doubt about it. Just coming up short on Prop 2. Prop 1 pass, if you weren't paying attention, both Prop 1 and Prop 2 had to go down in order for this stadium project to go forward. So there's a real state of uncertainty there at this point. As someone from Kansas who spent a lot of years in Kansas City, that would have been a really incredible rivalry. That would have been a rivalry, I think, that would have eventually been able to push its way, if not to the equal of Cascadia because of the history that they have competitively, but into the same sort of realm. The ease of travel, the way that the kind of the border is already a big deal with Kansas and Missouri, it would have been really cool. It's not going to happen, it seems, for the foreseeable future. But with all these different projects, it's something to watch. That's the requirement. You got to have your own building. You got to be able to come into the league at a certain point, both investment-wise and facilities-wise, and meet the criteria that's been laid out. So tough decisions, of course, for that expansion committee on MLS's side. But right now, it looks like St. Louis is out of the running. That's too bad. We'll see what happens from there.
Let's jump on Twitter real quick. A lot of CCL reaction. James Chelminski, I've seen this script before. I'll only believe that an MLS team can win CCL when I see them holding the trophy. Ben Smith in a similar way. I love MLS, but the proof is in the results. Just not good enough to win CCL. This was after FC Dallas. He said Whitecaps would get creamed. Christian responded to him on Twitter and said, Whitecaps didn't get creamed. Both them and FC Dallas put up a fight. Both had many opportunities in advance. Just wasn't their time. And Andrew Sullivan on Twitter, he said it just sucks because it felt like Pachuca was there for the taking in FC's Dallas case, a gap that is not that large.
Yeah, look, we're going to be in mourning here for, I don't know, at least 4 or 5 more days. But Doyle, I'm curious what you think about MLS's chance once this format shifts, once it's more like you're jumping in the knockout round instead of having to expel resources during the middle of the MLS season just to get there. Do you think that'll help MLS teams, or is it more the same of, look, still got to get over the mountain? Liga MX is still standing in front of you.
I think it's more of the same. I think what would have helped is if they kept the current format and just pushed these games back a month so that MLS teams were a little bit sharper and had their sea legs under them, because they don't now. Dallas has played, what, 3 games and Vancouver 4? It's not the same as being midseason form. So I think that would have helped. Anything worth doing is going to take time and effort and patience, and that's going to be the story for MLS. I am curious to see if this new sort of era of DPs that we're getting, guys like Ladero, guys like Jordy Reyna, who was injured for the Whitecaps, are going to make a difference. I do think that eventually the big difference will be homegrown players and a rising salary cap, and until we get to that point where there's critical mass in terms of both, it's not going to happen on the regular.
Last two quick ones from Twitter, at Dawson Pies. He says, thanks for the shout-out. He can confirm that he wrote the review, not me, about reggaeton and show tunes.
You're still reading that. There's just literally no physical evidence that that's not you.
Well, we're trying to get him to send a picture of him eating bacon because I would never do that. But okay. Last one, Andre R., and he says, I fully agree with Matt Doyle's assessment of Jermaine Jones in the national team. He goes on to explain why, but we just want to get Doyle that little bit of support.
Unfortunately, you don't have enough time for that. Remember, watch the games this weekend, Friday, LA-Montreal, 10:30 p.m. Eastern, and then on Sunday, some more national team fun for you. Orlando City and the Red Bulls at 4 p.m. on ESPN. In between that game and SKC Colorado Rapids, that one's on FS1 at 7. MLS Match Day Live, myself and Mike McGee, we're going to have fun running through all the weekend action. Make sure you tune in, and make sure you hit us up on the Hot Take Hotline, 401-206-0MLS. See you, everybody.
You're listening to Extra Time Radio.